Chapter 2. 1-2-1. The leader of the declined raised his hand, giving the caravan permission to approach. The temple rig rolled forwards at walking pace while the other vehicles formed a boundary about it, and the escorts dropped down from the fighting platform to walk alongside in a guard of honour. Two sand sleds pulled ahead, raising up great sails to create a corridor of shadow between the lowering gangplank of the mobile shrine and the perimeter of shade at the edge of the camp. Corferon swung himself over the side onto a rope ladder and swiftly climbed down to the shaded sand, his bare feet sinking into the heated grains. He hardly felt their scorching touch through scars and calluses as thick as the bottom of a shoe. It was a joke amongst his coterie that his soles were as inured to pain as his soul. He permitted such humour to continue as long as it was not deliberately perpetrated within earshot. Mockery of the powers and the Imperium was a blasphemy, of course, but he also knew that soldiers had their own ways, and it was better not to test their loyalty too hard with unnecessary injunctions on their behaviour. A handful of the nomads clustered forwards, bearing cups of water in welcome. It was a good sign, and Corferon felt his mood lighten at the prospect that his sermon might fall on willing ears for a change. Custom dictated that they host the preacher, but all too often such hospitality was short-lived, long enough only to satisfy tradition and reputation. The offering of water seemed a genuine welcome. He suppressed a grimace as he saw some of the nomads were marked with the swirls of the sand curse, or the scabby lesions of the cell eater. Uncleanliness was rife amongst the declined, a symptom of their irreligious ways, but he did not believe this justified denying them the truth. What was the point in bearing the word of the powers to those who already heeded it? That the fools of Varadesh had cast him out for suggesting that the Covenant should be more missionary in its outlook had only reinforced his belief that the truth lay in the wilderness between cities. That this was an apt metaphor for his endless quest through the desolation for pockets of wisdom was not lost on Corferon. Guided by the powers through the arcane mysteries of Colchisian astrology, Corferon had recruited dozens to his cause in the long season since his exile had begun. There were ears that would heed the word and the truth, and while they did, it was his duty to bring it to them.
"May our journey end in the waters,"
the nomad leader said, inclining his head in greeting. He was a little shorter than Corferon and maybe 7 years old, though most of his face was hidden by scarf and goggles. The hand that proffered the cup of water was lined with age, the leathery skin cracked and tight over sparse flesh.
"Blessings of the powers upon you,"
Corferon replied, raising up his left hand with the middle and index finger together, drawing the sign of the four in the air, as prescribed in the accounts of the Barabicus, a circular motion starting at the top left and moving down and right, followed by an X across the same. The nomad leader followed the movement of the fingers with a curious look, ignorant to its meaning but impressed by the import of the gesture and the solemnity with which it was delivered.
"I am Corferon, the bearer of the word."
"I am Fan Morgai, and these are my people."
He took a sip from the cup and passed it to Corferon, who allowed only enough liquid to moisten his lips. He was eager to begin his sermon, but Fan Morgai was insistent that all the customs were followed. After they had drunk from the same water, he then insisted on introducing his family and other prominent members of the tribe, reeling off names that Corferon forgot immediately as irrelevant. If they became followers, he would deign to spare more thought for them. But not before. 1-2-2. Eventually, Corferon was guided to the mats closer to the heart of the camp, though not those directly next to the central tent, as he might have expected. Rather than dwell on this strange departure from nomad tradition, he eagerly launched into his sermon, gesturing strongly to emphasize his points, dark eyes moving from one listener to the next in smooth transitions, as he had been taught in the chambers of the Oristry in Varadesh. The heat of his passion consumed him, fueling his words as he strayed from his practice lines to remark upon the journeys of Epixas of Ermgemez and her death at the hands of the unbelievers of that city when she returned with the truth. He could see understanding in the faces of his audience as they shared the pains of Epixax's tribulations and rejection, as they had been rejected by those who claimed themselves faithful.
"In each of us has been set a purpose,"
he told them, glorying in the opportunity to unburden his mind of their heavy thoughts.
"The powers look upon our works and are disdainful, for there is nothing beneath the Empyrean we can create that is not but a pale mirror to the glories of the upper spheres."
The spirit of the powers was upon him, a fire in his gut as their words passed from his lips. Theirs was the will. His was the word that carried it. He laid a hand upon the scarf-clad head of Fan Morgai, feeling a paternal regard for these dispossessed, though most were his senior by a half year and some much more. The powers had ushered them into his care, and he would not abdicate his responsibility to introduce them to the truth.
"I shall not shun you as others have, for the powers care not for our mortal hierarchies, only our dedication. It matters not that you dwell in the wild places, cast from civilization into the desert like animals, for we are all nothing but tenants on the lands of the powers. Who more than you know the meaning of sacrifice? What priest or priestess in the towers of Gurras or Varadesh can say they know the desires of the powers more than those forced to suffer each day beneath their burning scrutiny?"
He waved a hand towards the great orb beyond the parasol sails.
"Make no mistake. That what the sun is to the day, so the powers are to life. They are the light that sustains it, the fire that will consume it. As the sun is relentless upon our backs, so we must be relentless in our service."
The declined were held rapt by these words, so different from the dry testaments of other missionaries who had sought faith for their cause. Here was one who spoke in ways that matched their experiences, who knew something of their miserable lives. More than half the adults of the camp had gathered to listen to his sermon, and as many children as could muster a few moments of attention. Corpharon caught himself upon the crest of pride, about to plunge into the self-congratulatory trough beyond. It was not to him that they pledged their attention, but to the truth. He reminded himself he was but a vessel for the powers, an instrument of the will, and nothing more. His was not the credit, only the sacrifice. Such was the position to which he had been appointed. 1, 2, 3. Corpharon, possessed by the energy of the powers, started to pace as he spoke, moving along the row of cross-legged nomads at the front of the crowd. He directed his words to those at the back, encouraging them to hearken to his message so that they might know the truth.
"Unto us will be delivered the word, and with it shall we know the will of the powers,"
he told them. He clenched a fist to his sun-scarred chest.
"Into me has been passed this knowledge. I pass it to you, for the powers have spoken and declared that the message must be heard. A time of testing will come, when the powers turn their immortal gaze upon Colchis and judge the worthy from the unworthy. None can raise up the defense of, 'But I did not know,' for the powers have gifted us all with the means to know the truth."
He waved a hand towards the slaves bearing his accoutrement behind him. Many sacred books, a scepter with a fist-shaped head and other relics that he had come upon in his searching across the wastes. At the gesture, the slaves knelt and proffered up their burdens.
"I have read the wisdom in these ancient pages."
A half-truth, for he understood the language in only 6 books from his library.
"And in them I have discovered the word. And the word saith that we shall serve the powers to the exclusion of aught else. Slaves shall provide the food, for free men and women must bear the burden of worship, bending all effort to the praises of the powers that created and sustained us. Each of you is a chosen one."
He pointed at the crowd with a skinny finger. Some smiled, others flinched. He noticed Fan Morgai and a few others glance away. Corpharon pondered this as he continued.
"Each has their place in the machine of the universe, whether to be the cog or the cable, the switch or the fulcrum. The texts tell us that one will come, raised above the others in the eyes of the powers, to bring sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, the word to the mute."
Again the sharp eyes of the preacher caught a small flutter of movement from the chieftain and his family. Was it nervousness? Shame? Corferon took several paces, changing his perspective, his words now coming through instinct as he surveyed the camp from a fresh angle.
"Prestige and honour will reward the faithful!"
He indicated his followers, who waited in groups under the shade of the sunsails and on the deck of the mobile shrine.
"The light of the powers shall fall upon them, and all blemish will be removed from the body, so that it reflects the purity of the soul."
From this new position, he realized that Fan Morgai had not been looking away from Cor Faeron, but rather the chieftain and his close companions had glanced towards something. The main tent at the very center of the encampment, a large conical structure of white, black, and red, embroidered with sacred constellations. 1, 2, 4.
"Plague and misery shall be the lot of the faithless," said Cor Faeron, voice dropping to a snarled whisper,
his fierce gaze roaming over the crowd, seeking other suspicious behaviours or signs of guilt.
"Nothing is hidden from the gaze of the powers. All is laid bare before their immortal scrutiny, as the desert is set before the blazing sun."
This garnered a definite reaction, an exchange of looks between Fan Morgai and his wife. Cor Faeron stepped towards the crowd, arms outstretched with palms facing out as though laying benedictions upon them. They shuffled from his path, parting like sand before the wind, until he came to stand before Fan Morgai. He turned an accusing stare upon the nomad leader.
"What is in your heart, Fan Morgai? When the powers turn their gaze upon you, shall they see one of the faithful, or an agent of the faithless?"
Fan Morgai said nothing but swallowed hard, meeting Cor Faeron's gaze for only a moment. A bead of sweat ran down the side of his face, not unusual in such conditions, but the preacher took it as a further omen of the power's desires. He pressed on, stepping past the chieftain, to thrust a hand towards the leader's abode.
"What secrets do you hide in your own sanctum?"
he demanded.
"You may think that you can keep your secrets away from the sight of mortals, but the powers see all. They look into the hearts and minds of men and women as easily as I look into your eye now. Do not sully your tongue and my ears with denials and lies."
Cowed, hands trembling, Fan Morgai gave another look to his family and nodded. His wife and children gathered close as he moved towards the tent.
"I meant no wrong by it,"
he said quietly, stopping at the threshold.
"I intended no offence to the powers."
Cor Faeron nodded in silence, neither accepting nor condemning the statement. He waited, suppressing his eagerness to see what the declined had concealed from him. It would be Archaeotech, he was sure of it, something from one of the dead cities made in the time of the age before. All such artefacts were supposed to be turned over to the Covenant, but many tribes and rival sects hoarded the Archaeotech for themselves, as did Cor Faeron, though the declined were not to know that he was no longer an accepted member of the Covenant. In fact, he traded on that ignorance, assured of the traditional protections offered to a traveller of holy position.
"Bring it forth, so that we might see what the powers already know,"
he commanded imperiously, thrusting his finger again towards the tent. Fan Morgai pulled back the heavy flap of the door and stepped back.
"Come out,"
he said with a tremulous voice.
"Don't be afraid."
Cor Faeron's already furrowed brow knotted further, confused by this turn of events. A figure stepped from the tent, with the height and build of a child, swathed in the robes and scarves of a desert dweller. Cor Faeron was about to demand to be told what was happening when the child turned his face towards the preacher. For an instant he saw violet eyes, as intense as the sun, before the light of the powers blinded him, ending the universe as it had been, ushering in the age of the Golden One.